This, along with every episode of According to Flint, brought to you by Pendleton Whiskey. For more than a century, the Pendleton Roundup has defined what it means to be a cowboy. It also gave life to something equally renowned, a whiskey that captures that unique spirit in every bottle. A whiskey made with the finest northern grains and cut with Mount Hood Glacier water. A whiskey that celebrates the cowboy in all of us. That is Pendleton Whiskey. And that's true Western tradition. Pendleton Distillers, Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Please drink responsibly. Since 1973, the art of engraving brings to life the artistry that Montana Silversmiths is known for and is fueled by a passion for the Western lifestyle. Montana Silversmiths' buckles and jewelry are more than accessories. They are stories. Stories of moments and memories shared through the giving, receiving, and earning of Montana Silversmiths' buckles and jewelry. Celebrate what matters with Montana Silversmiths. Well, welcome to episode number 90 of According to Flint, the podcast. And to celebrate our 90th episode, we're bringing a guy that is 90. There you go.
Pretty close.
See? Interesting. How do I give you an intro? Not everybody may know you, but they know your work and all the people that you've worked with. David Allen, now the new general manager of the Nile. What is it? The Northern International Livestock Exposition. Rodeo. To me, I look at it as somebody, once again, contributing to the Western lifestyle. They pulled you out of retirement.
They did. And I gladly left retirement because I'd been sitting around, not a lot, but I was ready to do something besides think about what am I going to do today?
Yeah.
I was.
Well, we're sitting at this in front of these microphones because of a lunch we had together during COVID.
Yeah.
How did we go have lunch during COVID? The restaurant? Things were getting moving again, and we said, let's get some stuff out there.
Well, and in Billings, we didn't shut down like the rest of the world did much. Montana's kind of like, COVID, whatever. You know. I mean, that's just kind of the Montana culture. Yeah.
But we have a relationship goes way back. So when it came time, people were doing Facebook Live and Instagram Live things during COVID, and you said, we need to do this and kick up a podcast project.
I remember it was a fundraising dinner for Chase Hawks that we ran into each other that night, just kind of in passing. And I was like, hey, have you ever thought about podcasts? And you're like, and I said, we should talk about it. And then COVID hit and we ended up following up about it. But
And here we are.
And here we are, number 90.
90. So, but our relationship goes back, and I know the year was 1995.
Yeah.
And what was your role, first of all? I was doing the Bozeman Spring College Rodeo, but what was your affiliation, exact definition of your affiliation with the College National Finals Rodeo?
So I was the manager of the CNFR for, it was like 6 or 7 years, and that fell in that time frame. And Tim Corfield was running NIRA at that time, and I believe his daughter, I know she was going to school at Bozeman. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we would usually have a spring meeting, CNFR meeting, at the same time as the spring rodeo, and that's how we happened to cross paths. And you were doing, I'll never forget, it was one of the best comedy acts I've ever seen in rodeo. You were doing the piano act.
Uh-huh.
And it was awesome. I mean, I was like, who the hell is that? What is that? Man, that's different. I like it. I mean, it was fresh. It was, it was. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I don't think we knew each other then. But
not really.
We met.
You grabbed me by the fence and said, hey, I'm the manager of the college finals,
right.
Same arena, same field house. You said, when you see it come up to apply for the barrelman job, apply. And I said, okay. And then you walked away because you had a date that night.
Yes.
You had a date.
It was your
first date.
That was actually our first official date with what became my wife.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Logan's mom.
Well, we're not sure about that.
We're not sure, but you're married to his mother. Yeah. So I think that's interesting. It's funny, the full circle.
That's exactly right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And I remember I applied, and when I got that notification, I was living in Havre, Montana, and I got the letter that said, congratulations, you've been selected. That was a huge, like, boost for my career mentally.
Sure.
Like, to go, okay, that's that next
somebody
thing.
Recognizes... what you've got. And I mean, I know I had to say apply at that time because it wasn't my decision. There was a committee of the board that decided that, but Tim was all over you coming. I mean, everybody loved what you were doing. So it wasn't
decision. And I remember the year because I was on my honeymoon and went right to Bozeman to the college finals. But, those Bozeman years for the college national finals, that is where the college national finals gained footing and became something,
exactly.
Wasn't it?
Exactly, because it had moved around and hadn't done well in, like, I grew up in Deadwood, South Dakota, and it was in Deadwood 2 years one time in June, which is always wet. And, well, it was the year J.C. Trujillo won the bareback riding that year. So it was whatever year it was, and it was like 8 inches of mud and blah, blah, blah. And it had been down south somewhere, maybe Louisiana or something.
But, yeah, I think so.
And it had been a few places, and it had not done well. And I don't know how it ended up. Well, I do know a little bit. The Lions Club in Bozeman were the driving force behind that at that time. And Bob Arata, who worked for Don Harrington.
Yeah.
He ran Don Harrington's Pepsi distributorship there. And he was real active in the Lions Club at Bozeman and a couple other guys. They got it there and really got the community behind it. And remember, it had the old log fence around that.
Yeah, the jack fence.
Jack fence, yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah.
Do you know that my dad in the... late 50s, or one of the early rodeos, they had that jack fence, and he got bucked off over a horse and hit one at the end and caved his head in.
Ooh.
That's why.
I used to go to the Casey Tibbs had a match bronc riding in Nemo, South Dakota, every year in the late 50s. Right after Cheyenne, they would come up, and it was Harley Roth was a stock contractor, put it on. But they had that pole arena like that as well, and I was like, oh, look at this. And Jack Bushbaum and Casey Tibbs, all those guys were there. And that's what I grew up with.
Yeah. Well, I did that piano act in the college national finals in the arena. I have that somewhere on a VHS tape.
Good. It was.
And then it left Bozeman, and it was all the president. If you remember, the president of the college didn't like the tobacco and beer influence.
The
so
tobacco was
supposedly
the big thing. Yeah, right. But that's the one they used the most was the tobacco. And of course, Copenhagen Skoal was the biggest, contributor and scholarship funding and whatnot for college rodeo. And of course, Walt was there. And, Bozeman was a great fun town in those days. It was.
And it's still fun. It's changed a lot. It would be hard to have it there now because the building, it's a cool old field house, but it's a little outdated now. There's not the open area around it to park all the trailers. People still say should still be in Bozeman. It would be nice. The community got behind it, but it's a different place now. Structurally.
And you know what? Casper's done a great job.
Oh, I think.
That building, I love that.
I love that place.
Yeah,
I've had great experience there. It helps when your kids win. The memories are better. Because we moved right from there to Rapid City, and I think there was, 200 people there?
Yes, I know. I had to write a check to leave town on that one. Jim Sutton and I were partners on that for 2 years. Yeah. And we just could not get the Rapid City community to embrace it. They just, I don't know, they just didn't. Yeah. And now you look at Rapid City and look at that rodeo Rapid City, and my word. So,
yeah. But it's hard to read, though.
It is.
Those stock show towns where they have a big winter rodeo, it's hard to have anything else sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and then you got Rapid City is right there with Mount Rushmore. So when it's Memorial Day, everybody flips a switch and the tourists just pour out of everywhere. And that's all they think about.
So, yeah. Well, our college national finals broke the ice then for later. You know, I was thinking, I think it was then the very next year, 96, you took me. It was kind of those early years of PBR,
right?
Going to those big arenas. Yep. And I went to Kansas City and Albuquerque for you. And that's, people don't understand looking back at PBR, there was no exclusive stuff. They were produced more like rodeos. Yes. You were a promoter.
Yes.
They were co-prod kind of a little more, right?
Yep. We were in those days, because that was Randy's mindset and philosophy. Randy Bernard, who was the CEO at that time, that's how they could get, you know, kind of the capital backing and whatnot, is go in halves with somebody willing to promote and do the events. And I had Kansas City and I had Albuquerque, and I started the one in Denver as well.
Yeah.
But I was so involved in, you know, my other job, which was with Dale Earnhardt, that I couldn't focus that much on it. But Jerome Robinson's the reason that I brought you to Kansas City, so to speak, because, and I had known about you, but Jerome had, I don't know, you know the story better there, but it was because of Jerome.
Right, because I had got in with Jerome the winter before and done Spokane and Sacramento, his rodeos for him.
Right.
So then he was in the ground level kind of a PBR, so you guys communicated. I've always said that everybody has those, people or those moments in their career where somebody steps in and you can trace everything back to that.
Totally.
And with me, it was Jerome Robinson and you. Those were my kind of my ins to everything.
And I wouldn't do an event without Jerome, because he did all the production for me and all. He knew what he was doing. He was as honest as the day is long, and he never went over budget. He came in under budget every time, and I just wouldn't do one without Jerome.
He had deals all the time. Oh. Like, he'd take care of the guy. They went through this the last little bit at PBR without him, because he'd have a deal for a pallet of shavings and he'd take care of the feed store guy and he'd get the shavings and then help this guy. Yeah. That's why he was under budget, because he had deals.
No, he was the king of deals. He was.
Was Albuquerque, I think 96, I went from 1996. This year, 2024, was only the second time I didn't go to Albuquerque, not counting the COVID stuff. Only the second time I didn't go to Albuquerque since 1996. That's, 1 year I had a heart attack. This year I'm done.
Yeah.
Was it always the Ty Murray Invitational? Way back from day one.
From day one. So Tuff had his in Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it and was like, yeah, I kind of like that. You know, who else would? And Ty was the natural choice. I mean, he was the biggest name certainly at that time in the PBR, I thought. And so.
And he was kind of from there a little bit.
His dad trained racehorses, and they spent every summer in Ty's childhood in Albuquerque. They were from Phoenix, but they would go to Albuquerque and live at the racetrack all summer long every year. So, yeah, it was like a hometown for him. And so, yeah, it was always a Ty Murray Invitational, and we shook hands on it and never had a written nothing between us ever. Huh. And never even had an argument. And I've only missed two, and that was the last two, because I finally just said, you know, this PBR's changing, as it should, and, you know, I get it and all that. It was my choice to, like, hey, I've had enough. I think I had 25 or 6 years of it. That's plenty. And I missed working with Ty because he's a blast.
Hey, you know, Dave.
Yeah. Never know what.
Hey, Effer.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I'll never forget the year I did miss it. I always remember when Ty Murray was on Dancing with the Stars because that's the year I had a heart attack.
Is that the year you weren't there?
Yeah, because he used to call me.
Well, we son of a bitch. You know, yeah. We're like, is Flint going to die? He's way too young to die.
So no contract, though, you guys.
No, never did. I would send him a copy of the settlement and say, this is how it's flushed out, and tell me, and he'd, you know, ask a question or two maybe, and then it would be okay, and then we'd settle every year.
He's no dummy, is he?
No, let me tell you, no. Ty's, yeah, I kind of call, he's kind of a cowboy renaissance guy. You know?
Oh, really, absolutely. Is. Yeah, really I agree.
He'll amaze you to some of the things he's into, but he studies. He's not going to talk about something if he hasn't looked it up and thought about it. And Ty's pretty sharp.
Yeah. So I don't even think, I'm not asking this just for cameras, but you mentioned you couldn't get all the way into it on things because of your job with Dale Earnhardt. What is your order of, were you with rodeo, then Wrangler, then Dale Earnhardt, NASCAR, were you? I don't know what the roots are to your relationship with that.
So ironically, it all kind of started here in Billings as well. So Larry Jordan, who I knew, I was shooting rodeo photos and I wasn't doing anything. I was just kind of existing. But I got to know Larry Jordan and he was on the PRCA board and he was starting this World of Rodeo tabloid newspaper, and he said, hey, you've got and I studied journalism at school, and he said, you've got this, are you interested? And I said, man, I'll take anything because I got nowhere to live. I got my pickup in a beanbag chair. Yeah. And that's what I got. And he said, well, come on out to Billings. And I was living in Oregon, and I came back to Billings. And he said, yeah, I got you a place to stay and blah, blah, blah. And that's another story I'll tell you sometime. That's a great one.
This episode brought to you by Element, L-M-N-T, a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix formulated for anyone on a mission to restore health through hydration. It's perfect for athletes, folks who are fasting, or anyone following keto, low-carb, whole food, or paleo diets. Each stick pack delivers a dose of electrolytes free of sugar, artificial colors, or those other dodgy ingredients you see in other sports drinks. Also, receive a free Element sample pack with any order. Just use drinkelement.com/Flint. That's LMNT, drinkelement.com/Flint for a free sample pack with any order of Element. And remember, stay salty.
We were staying room to room in the Eastern Montana College, but we had to go in the back door. And there was snow.
In the dorms?
In the dorms in the summer. I think Larry had a master key and just knew which rooms were empty. And so
glamorous.
It was awesome. So anyway, it started here, but Larry was on the board of the PRCA and they were looking for somebody to kind of start a new media department and whatnot. Dave, great old guy. He was retiring from the PRCA. Anyway, I ended up getting that job. So I went to the PRCA from here in Billings in 76 or 5, something like that. And I was there about 5 years, maybe 6. And Wrangler was looking to really step up and get into marketing of rodeo. Because at that time, Lee, Levi, and Wrangler were all playing with it. Mm-hmm. Wrangler wanted to get in it big. And they had hired away some executives from R.J. Reynolds to come over and take over Wrangler's management. And that's how I got hired to go to Wrangler. So I went from PRCA to Wrangler. Well, then Wrangler went out and signed Dale Earnhardt at the same time I'm coming in to do rodeo. And then right at that time, I got promoted to take all of their special events marketing, which included Earnhardt and country music and tractor pulls and all kinds of stuff. Huh. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history. I was with Dale. Wrangler got sold. So I left Wrangler and went with Earnhardt and Childers. And they backed me, and I started my own sports marketing thing, representing drivers, mainly Dale, but he and Richard owned other teams as well. And we had 11 teams at one time that we were handling.
What was the name of your?
Champion Sports
Group. Champion Sports Group. Yeah. That's my letter for the college.
Oh, there you go. There you
I
go.
Think, or maybe it came from the NI. No, I think it was you.
Yeah.
I got a lot of stuff from Champion Sports Group.
Well, all of Dale's, so his he had three or four airplanes. That was Champion Air. And he had this Champion this, Champion that. So I just fell in line and named it Champion Sports Group. And we handled all of their sponsorships, their appearances, their marketing. We basically did everything for them, but we were not the personal manager. We didn't handle their money. I didn't want to do that. Dale had approached me about that once, and I was like, hey, we're friends right now. I'd like to stay that way.
So, yeah, it was a little different than it was agent, but not the money part of it.
Yes, exactly. And in those days, so this is early 80s, NASCAR's just starting to blow up, and mainly around Dale. But teams and drivers, there weren't multiple cars with a team, and you didn't have teammates.
Earnhardt
didn't share anything with anybody because everybody was, you were out there to protect your secrets and everything. So they just kept everything to themselves, and so including their money and the management of their money. And so Dale and Teresa, for a long time, did most of his own agent stuff, if you will, working with the lawyers and that. But we did all the rest, and we ended up doing most of the groundwork and legwork and whatnot, which was fine. We didn't care.
Was he intimidating? That's his name, right? The Intimidator?
The thing about Dale is he never asked you to do something he wasn't willing to do, and he was willing to do anything. So you better keep up. I mean, but he was just, you could walk by him in the garage area, and he'd go, hey, how are you? Great to see you. And you could turn around and walk by him, and he might look at you like, you owe me money, you SOB. I mean, he just was an interesting personality. And Kyle Petty called him John Wayne in a race car, and that's kind of what he was. He was.
I've always tried to. I always think every sport kind of has that person that we compare the other guy to. You know, we do thing in the PBR about be cowboy, and it whatever exemplifies.
Right.
I always thought Dale Earnhardt was the cowboy kind of. Now, Richard Petty always wore the.
Yeah.
The cowboy hat. But to me, as far as a cowboy attitude, a J.B. Mooney type, Dale Earnhardt was that guy.
It was totally Dale. Totally. Yeah. And so Bobby Brown, Bronc rider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A good friend. I've known Hooter a long, long time. He and Dale had absolute identical personalities. Hmm. I mean, their mannerisms and just the way they acted. And, you know, Hooter just kind of had that, go ahead, knock it off my shoulder. Go ahead. I mean, he just had that swagger to him. Dale definitely had swagger and more.
Yeah. Now, you've been on Dale Jr.'s podcast.
Yep.
Look at now you hit now you got well, hit the
I moved
big
up
time
here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he'll watch this one. We'll have to let him know to tune him in.
And say, hey, if you want to complete your education, yeah.
Yeah. We've always wanted him on this one.
He'd be a good one. I'd tell you what. So I've known him, Dale Jr., since he was like 6 or 7 years old. He is the media mogul of NASCAR now. I mean,
yeah.
The whole thing they've put together with Dirty Mo Media, which was something he dreamt up years ago, and all of the spin-off podcasts they have under that mm-hmm. umbrella, and it's all based out of his headquarters back there in Mooresville. And he's NBC broadcast, and he's like, wow.
Yeah, he's pretty good at it.
He really is good at it, and I'm just so impressed with him because he's so so reverent about the history of NASCAR mm-hmm. and the old stuff, and which so many young guys forget about, you know.
Yeah.
Even rodeo's the same way. A lot of them, Donnie Gale, walk around, and half of them don't even know who he is.
Right.
You know, and it's like, whoa.
I remember when I met him, we did the Charlotte PBR.
Correct.
And you did it, and it was the Dale Jr.
Right.
Something.
I was really hoping that would take legs, but it didn't. But yeah.
Well, I was back in the center alley pre-show, and it was kind of half dark. And I think it was when I did a little pre-show introduction, and I'm back there, and I look, and I kind of see a silhouette, and it was him standing there by himself.
Yeah.
Hey, man. I said, hey, man. How's it going? I said, I'm Flint. Yeah, good to see you. I said, I know Dave since like 1995. Oof. He kind of just gave me this. He's like, yeah, he said, I've known David since I was a little kid, and him and my dad. So we stood there and had this good visit. No one else around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pleasant.
He's such a great, his sister, Kelly, his older sister, and she took care of him when they were young. She, first job she ever had was working for me at Champion Source mm-hmm. Group, yeah. And then his older brother, Carrie
had a daughter that did pretty well high school rodeo.
She's at Durant.
Oh, is she there now?
I think that's where she's at. She's college rodeoing, and I think she's going to make the finals this year.
Her mom reached out to my wife, Katie,
sure.
about some horse Renee, stuff. And
Renee, Renee's a sweetheart.
Yeah, so anyway, small world.
Yeah.
You were pretty close. I remember when Dale got killed that day, and you were the first person I thought of that day. Rough. Yeah,
that was a long day.
Yeah.
Long day.
You know, I'm right now pretty directly involved with the Kid Rock Rodeo, rodeo thing. You know, there's PBR teams. There's the Kid Rock Rodeo deal is pretty unique. But you were around pro rodeo in the Winston Tour team.
Right. Yep.
But a little different. Everybody says there was team rodeo back then, but it was a little different.
Oh, it was definitely different.
And
wasn't
it you? I think you and somebody else both told me if it would have been given a chance and handled better, it could have taken off.
Well, and it was really, the truth were known, it was really the precursor to the PBR happening because it opened some eyes of some people that were like, man, you know what? I think if we got the top 20 bull riders together, we could maybe do something like this. But yeah, it just was not given the chance because there was so much jealousy and opposition to it at that time.
Weird.
Yeah, really. Imagine that in the rodeo business, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and frankly, NASCAR's the same way, but it just, every time we turned around, there was somebody against something. And Ken Stemmler, who dreamt it up, was trying to appease everybody, which that never works.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, it definitely would have worked. There were some things that I probably would have done a little bit differently and whatnot, but it was such a revolution from where we were and, you know, what was going on with rodeo and television was not happening because they just weren't interested in, you didn't even know who was going to be up. It's like, well, yeah, you know, so-and-so, Larry Mahan's was here yesterday in the Slack. He won't be in right. the televised. But it's like, what?
So you were running into a little bit of that same thing of, this is how we've always done it, oh. the tradition of rodeo. So Winston, that the tour kind of broke away from that. Then you get that pushback from the old, that's not how we always do it. Yep. So I could see that as a precursor to standalone bull riding events, whether it was Bull Riders only, PBR.
Yep.
That's funny that all these years, you still, that was originally the issue.
No, it was... you know, I just, it was, it, the mentality was, and I, let's be honest, it was more of the timed event mentality than it was rough stock. That's where most of the pushback came from, was the timed event end of the arena. The mentality was, my dad rodeoed and his dad rodeoed and everybody could enter and it, we're here for
everybody. It's not fair.
Yeah, it's not fair. And it's like, that's it is fair. You just have to get to this level to get to this level, you know.
So that deal, how many, so the teams didn't have ownership like PBR teams. They were sponsored by company, like it was a corporate ownership a little bit.
Yep.
And each event had how many guys? One or two?
One guy. One, you had one, well, two team ropers, but and we didn't have breakaway then, so we had one of each and then two team ropers. So, and the Wrangler, that was my team, was Wrangler. And we got Willie to Nelson because we were sponsoring his tour at that time. We got him to agree that we could name it and call it the Willie Nelson Wranglers. And, you know, we got to take all our team to his ranch and do a photo shoot with him that day. And, oh, it was a blast. Yeah.
So how many teams, so you basically, but it wasn't a, they didn't run timed events at the same time. Everybody did the event and it was a total points kind of reward.
It was traditional rodeo, except, well, it was a lot like college rodeo.
Yeah, right.
You know, you wore the colors of your team or the vest or whatever it was. And you just competed as you would normally in a rodeo. Obviously it was limited entry because it was limited just to those teams and whatever. I can't remember. Did we have like 12 or 15 teams maybe?
Yeah, well, you had to have 10 because you needed to fill the events.
Yeah. So
probably, yeah, it's not fair though because everybody can't enter. Right. Those same.
And now look at what we're doing, you know, like Houston and Fort Worth and those, which I love. I think
they're kind of invitationals in a way. You got to qualify there.
It's a tournament style.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, everybody has a chance. It's just, if you're really good, you have a better chance, you know, or you're seated in or whatever. You should be. Right. That's what sells the tickets, folks. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
And that's how NFL, NBA, everybody works that way. PGA, I always thought, was the closest parallel to draw to rodeo because...
A little bit.
You know, everybody's out there for themselves, and you got to get your own sponsors and do this and that, but... you got to qualify to get on the tour and you got to hold your position. PBR's like that, you know.
Yeah.
You got to hold your position to stay on the tour. And it ought to be that way.
So how'd you get along with Willie?
Well, I was like Bill Clinton. I never inhaled, so.
You couldn't help it around Willie, could you?
Oh, Lord.
What's the story? So Logan tried to feed me stories that he left his, what's his guitar's name?
Trigger.
Old Trigger. Yeah. He left Trigger some.
We were doing a commercial ad shoot. It was going to be Willie and Richard Childress and Dale Earnhardt. And there is a print ad out. You can Google it and find it. And we were doing that shoot. It was in San Francisco. Willie was on tour and he was playing out there. But we were going to do it the next day. And so... we had this studio rented. Our ad agency had everything set up. We get over to the shoot, and no guitar. Willie didn't bring Trigger. And we're like, oh, man, that's a big part. So he looked at me, and I'm like, okay. In a cab, I go back across the bay to wherever the bus was and they were staying. And I get Trigger and I take it back in the cab, and I was the longest cab ride. I'm like, God, don't let anything happen to this guitar. I mean, it's going to be in the Smithsonian or something. And I'm riding across it, you know, and, oh, please. But yeah, I had to go get Trigger and take it back to y'all.
Oh, cradled Trigger. Trigger's famous. Him and old Trigger.
Yeah, I never let go of it. I guarantee you, I didn't.
You're never supposed to smoke weed with Willie in the bus. That's the rule.
Toby Keith.
Yeah,
and he was right. He was definitely right. I mean, so here's a great little story. The first year he wanted to do, first or second year, wanted to do Farm Aid. Well, he wanted it televised. So he had to get a TV package with it. And the networks just weren't buying it. So he went after Ted Turner, and Ted turned white as a sheet when Willie pulled out the stuff. And, Willie, I got a conference call. I better go. And he's gone. So then he's like, well, the old Nashville Network.
Yeah.
Well, I won't say their names because they're great guys. But the two guys that were head of Nashville Network at the time, the president and the CEO, he got them to come to a concert. And he tells me that afternoon, he said, better come by the bus tonight. I got the TNN guys coming. Talk about Farm Aid. I'm like, okay. He has on his, he's got like four flavors of tequila. And then where he would sit, he could reach back in the bunk behind his, where he sat in the bus. And there was this giant TV tray that, where he kept his stuff. And that was his rolling tray. And I'm just observing kind of from the other side of the bus, and he's, you know, talking to them, and they're exchanging pleasantries, and, oh, yeah, try this tequila, and they're loving it. They're sitting there talking with Willie, and they loved him, and, you know, everybody loves him. Well, the next thing you know, he fires it up, and I mean, by the time that was over, those two guys didn't know if they were on Pluto, Mars. They agreed to everything.
And that's how he got his television deal. They made the mistake.
And I've run into one of the guys, every once in a while I'll run into him, and he'll go, man, oh, man, he said, I still can't believe I lived through that.
Oh, the legends are,
yeah. Right. He was definitely right, yeah.
Yeah, I believe Toby spent some time, probably, in that bus. What about, and that's why all the years, you know, I consider our friend Rick Sutcliffe a friend of mine, former Cy Young Award winning pitcher for the Cubs all those years.
Yep.
You know, it was through at Rick Sutcliffe's place I met Mark Harmon, who now that's everybody.
Right. We went out to his house that time.
Yeah, that's and right. Mark Harmon, Duron Cherry, who played for the Chiefs. Right. I was thrilled. Yep. I have pictures of that.
Yep.
And it's funny in this world, as I look back too, and you have to, the people we get to just cross paths with, and then years later, you're still friends with them.
Yeah, I just talked to Sut a couple nights ago. He called me. Yeah. He was home alone and nursing a bottle of wine. So
he called me.
Yeah.
I'll be sure and not do that. Right. Too. Yeah. But it like George Strait, did you get acquainted?
So I have a George Strait story that's a little bit interesting. So when I was at Wrangler and we were pursuing Willie to do that tour sponsorship and whatnot, it was like 81 or 82. And George Strait was just kind of coming on the scene. Yeah. I think he had Wrapped Around My Finger or Unwound or one of those. He had one hit out, but anyway, he and his manager just died.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I wish, but it left me.
Yeah, they caught me somewhere in Nashville, got me aside. They're like, man, George is the real deal here. He's the cowboy. He's the why isn't Wrangler? And I was like, well, I, you know, this hopefully isn't the end of what we're doing in country music. It's just the beginning. And, you know, Willie was large at that time. And so that's my only real engagement with George was kind of hanging my head about why I didn't get him signed with Wrangler. Of course, now look at him. He's got his own line of Wrangler clothes.
Yeah.
You know,
good job.
Yeah, right.
Good intuition on that deal.
If you want my marketing expertise, there's a good example for you.
So what you're telling me is you can't get a hold of George and make him come on this podcast either.
Probably but, not.
Hey, remember me?
Yeah.
I told you. Click. We had a George Strait story on the Buckle presentations in Vegas.
Okay.
When Tough Cooper won the go-round one night. And he went out on stage, and Kurt Blake, my friend Kurt, was backstage kind of playing the walk off and on music. And a guy came up and said, hey, you think you could play any George Strait when we walk up? And Kurt said, this isn't a damn, what the hell do you think this is? A damn jukebox, like something like that. And he shook his head, and they started walking out, and guy walks by and says, George Strait, nice to meet you. Son of a bitch, he said. Sorry, we don't take
timing's everything.
Yeah. Were you in on the rodeo for President Reagan? Was that the one that didn't Charlie Sampson get hurt really bad?
Really bad.
And it was just an exhibition.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, nothing in rodeo is just an exhibition.
Well, but. it was Malcolm Baldridge, Mac Baldridge, who was a great friend to rodeo for years and years. He was friends with Jack Roddy and some of the California. He was a CEO of an industrial company back in Connecticut. And Reagan had lured him into being the Secretary of Commerce for him. So Mac got Reagan to agree to have a command performance for the president. And then Reagan and Nancy threw a barbecue on the south lawn of the White House that afternoon after the rodeo. So, yeah, we had a rodeo at...
it's in Landover, Maryland, wasn't it?
That's
in
exactly
the arena
right.
there?
Exactly. And Charlie got his head crushed pretty bad. And, you know, was in the hospital quite a while in D.C. And then, as I remember right, they had to drive him back out home out west. The doctors said, your skull right now, you shouldn't be flying with the pressure and all of that. It was that bad. And he got hurt really bad. And
did you go to the barbecue?
We had a great time at the barbecue. And then I was with the Wrangler executives. So after the barbecue, they're like, well, let's go. And when we flew home back to Greensboro, well, I understand I missed the real fun. So imagine this, some cowboys went to a establishment in downtown D.C. and got into it with some, I don't know, uniformed civil service, whoever, I don't know who they were, but military guys. And as I remember it, I think J.D. Yates, J.D. was probably pretty young then, J.D. might have helped egg something on. I don't know. I don't want to be unfair to JD. Maybe, but I remember that Trujillo was there. But Hooter Brown did the cleaning up. He mopped up the show, and they all left before the authorities showed up.
That's the most rodeo cowboy thing ever. He invited to the White House. But you still get in a fight in the town.
Right.
Reagan was a cowboy, though.
Oh, very much. He was so cool to, I mean, he just went from table to table like he was your uncle or something, and would sit down, and, you know, the Secret Service guys stayed way back. They didn't hover around him. And he was so at ease, and, yeah, it was, everybody had a blast. They had a great time.
Isn't there more to that story?
Yeah, is there more to that story?
You're talking about the clothing? Oh, yeah. So, leading up to it, our president at Wrangler, when he finds out we're going to the White House and we're going to do this, he's like, we're going to outfit Reagan's cabinet. I want to get their sizes, and we're going to, I'm like, okay, okay. So we get a hold of Mac's assistant, sweet lady. And I said, I don't know if this is doable, but our president would like to, and we'll put a rush on everything. It'll be first class, blah, blah, blah. She said, well, let me talk to Mac. And then she called back and said, yeah, Mac's going to take it to the next cabinet meeting, and we're going to get all the sizes. And, you know, the value of it, of the clothing was going to fall low enough to where it wasn't like some big gift to a government employee thing. So it was just a Western shirt and jeans. So she gets me the list. And that's, at that time, I'm sure it was all men, older than me even, that were on the cabinet. And so, you know, they're like 42 or 44 waist with a maybe 28 inseam or something like that. All of that. So that was most of them. And so anyway, I get the list. We send it off to the plant in Oklahoma City, where at that time, all of the cowboy jeans, the 13MWZ jeans were at. And they were going to send the shirts in. And everything was going to come in there and then ship straight to Mac's assistant. Oh, about 4 or 5 days later, she calls me and she's laughing. And she's like, I don't know, but something's not right. And I'm like, what happened? Well, somehow in the plant, they had reversed the waist and the inseams. So they sent them all these clothes that looked like they were for an NBA team, you know, like
44
length. Jeans, like the president of the company blew. I had to go up and say, hey, got a problem here. And I mean, he blew and he said, sit down. And he gets the plant manager on the phone. And there was a lot of Ty Murray expletives in there. And he said, and if you want to be here tomorrow, those clothes will be in D.C. tomorrow. To the plant manager. Uh-huh. He said. It was like, wow. And they were. They bought a plane ticket for somebody and packed a giant box. And she took it straight to D.C. And but, yeah, they reversed all the sizes.
Do you remember what Ronald Reagan wore in Wranglers? What was his size?
You know,
how big a guy was he?
He was tall. I'm going to say he was 6'3", 6'4", something like that. He was in pretty decent shape, you know. He probably was a 34 or a 35 maybe, you know, waist.
Yeah.
Inseam was probably 38. I don't know, something like that. He was a tall guy.
See, that's historic information to have. What size Wranglers does Ronald Reagan wear? You know shit. Nobody else knows. But when we talk about all the people we get to run into and somebody I felt pretty good friends with, that we get to have Logan over here all the time. But your firstborn is named Garrison.
Yes.
After Walt Garrison.
Yes. Yeah.
And that all comes from the rodeo. He was with Copenhagen Skull, U.S. Smokeless forever.
Yeah.
Had the early commercials.
Yep.
Man, that guy, he was visible. He became just a fixture at rodeos.
A cowboy. I mean, he just was. We hit it off. So it was the strike year. What was it, what, like 74 or 5? I was at PRCA, and they weren't playing football, so they were on strike, and we found out through Procom he was starting to enter some rodeos. I was like, maybe we could get him to. So I forget how I ran him down, somebody that knew somebody, and said, you know, would he be willing to come to Cheyenne, enter Cheyenne, but then come up there and, you know, because Cheyenne got a lot of media and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Can we do something with Walt there? And then, yeah, hell yeah, I'll do that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, that began our friendship, well, all the way till he died. It just, we hit it off. That week, actually it was about 2 days, but it seemed like a week. He shows up in Denver. I pick him up at the airport. He jumps in my van, and he said, "Oh, we got to find a grocery store." I'm like, "Oh, okay." This is the first time I really met him. He says, "Yeah, we need a grocery store." So we go to Safeway or whatever. We're headed to Cheyenne. He goes in, and he comes back out, and he's got like both arms under him, grocery sacks full of margarita mix and all kinds of holiday festivity refreshments.
He bought a six-pack and a knick-knack, as we like to say.
And so we hit the road. We went to the Cheyenne. They had a big lunch during the day, like as a kickoff to Frontier Days. But there was 500 people there, you know, and he was going to be the guest speaker, and that's where my nickname took shape, because my hair was real curly and all that, and
Brillo, by the way,
right? And Dave Knight at R.J. Reynolds had first said I was Brillo-headed something. Well, Walt kind of picked up on that, and he got up and told everybody, you know, because I introduced him, and he got up and said, "Thank you, Brillo." He said, "I see your hair's done by wearing blender today," and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that was midday. By that night, by 2 in the morning, we're on stage in Laramie, singing with Hawkeye.
With Hawkeye Hanson. Oh.
Yeah.
In Laramie.
In Laramie. I don't know. At the Holiday Inn in Laramie. the lounge act.
It was a different world then.
It was. But that just, we just hit it off from there. And Walt was definitely one of the best friends I ever had. And I always told him, I said, If I ever have a kid, I'll name him after you. And why would you do that? You know? But that's how Garrison got his name. And
it's funny that I was in Cheyenne, because when I think of Walt, I met him other places, but I remember a couple of years in a row when I was done doing the rodeo in Cheyenne, but would go for the PBR.
Sure.
So on the Monday and Tuesday performance, I'd go up in the U.S. Smokeless suite and sit with Walt for an hour.
Yep.
And just visit. And watched the Bulldog and watched it. And it
probably
was
him and Lou Bantle.
Could be.
Who was, Lou loved him. Lou was the chairman of U.S. Tobacco, and he loved Walt.
Yeah.
He just loved him. Well, he's hard not to like. He's very real. I mean, he'd tell it like it is. But and Walt was no dummy either. I mean, he's pretty street smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, man, I miss the guy. I really, you know, that was a hard deal.
To tie into kind of what I do and you've always done, you are now with the Nile here, which is here in Billings.
Right.
There's always we need to change rodeo. Well, rodeo, if done right, has record attendance. People still now being, it's a good time to be a cowboy.
Boy, rodeo's never been healthier.
Yeah. But you still got to translate it and make it work in a local. There are some markets that it's still, it takes work. And I think Montana and Billings is a little fickle now and then.
It is.
But there's some challenges for the Nile. It used to be one of the last rodeos of the year. Now they switched the season. It's one of the first. That didn't help. Yep. What are challenges? Like, what do you deal with day to day to keep building and maybe make that rodeo better?
Well, we're going to make it better. We're going to do some significant changes. But the biggest challenge has been what you and I've talked about many times is, "Oh, we've never done that before" mentality. Mm-hmm. I hate that. It just doesn't. Don't tell me that. Tell me you don't like it versus, "Well, don't do that. We've never done that." That just doesn't cut it. But for a number of reasons, and it doesn't even matter anymore, the community of Billings has lost touch or connection with the Nile and that whole Western culture. Now, that's really, it's almost embarrassing to say, living in Montana.
It happens in Montana, though.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. This is a cowboy state. all those people moving here that we don't want moving here, that's why they're coming here, because we are a cowboy state, mm-hmm. and we have that Western culture. But yet we have people that have been here maybe forever that kind of want to move away from it, and they want to be more urban or more this. And
I agree. Like,
what's wrong with you? Be really good at what you are instead of pretending to be something you're not. And mm-hmm. that's a big part of it. And you're right, the Nile used to fall. It was the last rodeo of the year. So if you had to make the NFR, you had to come here. And they lost that, but they just have not kept up with anything. And we're going to have the Nile Rodeo again this October, as it's always been, because it's too far down the road to change much. Now, there'd be little tweaks, but 25 and beyond, we're going to put on a rodeo again. We're going to give it, because like I said, rodeo's never been healthier.
Yeah.
If you can't sell rodeo tickets in Montana, what are you doing?
Mm.
You know, that's my attitude about it. It's like, look at what's going on in these cowboys. I mean, you got a cowboy 2 years ago almost made $1 million. Just rodeo, not PBR or any of that, but just, you know, the Stetson Wright kid is like, wow. But all these events are, you know, it's healthy.
People have a thought that Montana instantly, like with my job, instantly, oh, well, people up there know all about you. You're probably famous and da-da-da. I do you know how many people around, like, restaurants or bars in here in Billings will say, yeah, I've never really been to a rodeo. And I just think, you don't have to be a cowboy, but just, you've never been to Big Timber during the rodeo and went to the street dance. And you know, just to me, it is a lot of people push back. You know. They push back. I remember in the early 90s teaching school in Havre, Montana, and I quit wearing my Western buckle to teach school because, hey, hillbilly, redneck, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're right. I like the way you put that. We're going to put on a rodeo again. Like,
we are. And don't sell yourself short. You're the biggest rodeo name in this state. Bar none. There's no doubt. I mean, I don't mean any disrespect to whoever I'm not thinking of, but
Clint Bronger. I don't know.
Yeah, Roscoe. You can't go border to border with in any town, and you'll find a lot of people that know who Flint is, and that part's just a fact. But yeah, rodeo should not be like it is in this state. It just should not be the way it is. The whole state needs to be better about it. I mean, there's some good rodeos here, but we could all raise our bar.
Yeah.
I mean, we could.
And you always post funny things about keeping people out of Montana. But
well,
but
you
I
can
always
visit. You don't move here.
I always tell them they just want what we're supposedly have.
Right.
And you know, people say, "Oh, this cold winter, that'll drive them out of here." Have you ever been to some of the places they leave? This snow is nothing compared, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather have this than the snakes and the tornadoes and the, you know, I can live with the winter.
Yeah, I know.
I grew up with it.
Yeah, Deadwood. Yeah. You're a Deadwood guy.
Oh, yeah, they get a lot of snow.
Yeah, I don't know. It's always, you and I have always had interesting discussions about how to keep things rolling and who to touch base. So I'm interested to see how it goes, because I want Billings. Listen, the Chase Hawks Rough Stock Rodeo does very well.
Yep.
The PBR has always done very well. Yep. Used to be the NRA Finals was in February and it did really well. Yep. So you just hate to see it grow apart. It's interesting because let me pick two cities in Montana that are really growing. Bozeman, it gets all the publicity about growing because it's a little different demographic.
Right.
But Billings is growing and expanding. High schools, I don't know if as fast, but they're both growing. But here's what I see. Billings is growing in an industrial Montana-ish way, where Bozeman is people coming from cities and there's money behind it. You put on a rodeo in Bozeman, sells out. There is so much excitement. in the summer, the college rodeo, as we record this coming up this weekend, they'll get 15,000 people in 4 days at a college rodeo. So Bozeman latches onto it because there's a lot of outsiders. Billings is growing, but pulling away from it a little bit because it's a little more Montana. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Oh, exactly.
It's,
right.
And two hours apart.
Exactly.
Two different stories.
It's two different cultures almost. It's so weird. But I like to look at what the Suttons have done in Rapid City, because I was around with Jim and Julie in the very beginning of that winter show there in late January, early February. And they lost money, I know, 2 or 3 years at least, trying to build that. I went down there this year for the first time to see the new building, and my kids were working down there and whatnot. And I'm from there, that area. You couldn't move in Rapid City.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like the NFR was in Rapid. It was, I mean, everywhere. It was just packed. And every night at the rodeo was sold out. And it's like, there's a market 5 hours away, 400 miles away, 350, whatever it is. And same demographics, you know, it's still an agricultural
very
based,
similar, yeah.
They're not quite as big as we are population-wise. And I'm working with Amy Sutton now to get the economic impact numbers from that. And I want to sit down with some leaders here in Billings and go, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. We're actually trying to push this out of town and push it away. And it's like, it's low-hanging fruit for us. And you don't have to give up anything. You can still do your art shows and your other stuff, which all matters. Yeah, we have a diverse, which is really big buzzword now. We have a diverse demographics and whatnot. But cowboy sells. It works.
Yeah.
If they'll watch Yellowstone, they're darn sure cowboy. You know, but it aggravates me that the biggest population center in Montana with the biggest venue, we don't have the best rodeo even close.
Yeah.
We should.
Keep working at it.
Exactly. I'm loving it. I'm having a blast.
One more thing, that because you brought it up and it left my mind. I give certain people credit for my career in the arena. The guy that got me on a microphone dressed in a sport coat standing on a stage doing it was Jim Sutton.
Yeah.
He invented the late night talk show
exactly,
in Rapid City. And from that, Outside the Barrel in Vegas took off. He always says, I owe him money for that. you owe me money for...
I tell you what, P.T. Barnum had nothing on Jim Sutton. Or Cotton Rosser.
That's right.
Both of those guys.
Those minds, I know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. So I figured since you kind of got me going on this, I better let you come in.
Well, I'm glad to do it.
But it's funny in this business, so I bring up your name and, oh, yeah, I know Dave. I brought it up the other day on a meeting. Something, David Allen. Oh, yeah, I know Dave.
I probably owed him money.
That's why I think they mentioned that.
Yeah. So. It's good to see Logan working. Can you keep him employed?
I can't make a promise there. It depends.
Please, we don't want him back. We don't want him home.
You're too. I'm not putting Garrison to work. No, and it's Logan's pushing
it. Hey, look, I palmed him off on the Lockhart, so don't.
I know. Now you're.
They haven't figured it out.
Now you're related to. You are. What is, how do you say it, in-law, you're...
I don't know. I mean, Lisa and Grady are great people, just really fine people.
Yeah, who...
So I guess we're...
One of the greatest...
Somehow.
Cowgirls of all time, Lisa Lockhart.
She doesn't end up in a Hall of Fame. There's something wrong with Halls of Fame.
That's the other conversation I've had.
Yep.
There's people like...
I mean, she should be there now.
Right.
Look at the... what.
I know it.
Yep.
That's another, I've covered that topic a lot.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm with you. I'm all with you.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, man. No, I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I am. Thanks, man. Yeah, appreciate
your
that.
Your girls, too. Look at what they've done.
They're okay. Lucky for our kids.
Isn't it cool to watch them go like that?
Yeah. Makes me feel old, though. Not as old as though. No. Episode number 90.
I got booked your age.